Alrighty, welcome back. We are up to episode 26 of the Gridiron Pulse podcast, joined here by my colleague, Mr. Cole. How are we doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing great, Jacob. And, you know, I was not expecting for us to have so much timely stuff to talk about, but it seems like they're just feeding us all this news. And we got it. Before we know it, we have a loaded show.
Absolutely jam-packed show this morning. So we can start off right here with the most recent news that just hit our timeline. EA College Basketball has announced its return, coming out for a new game. They didn't say when or by what year it will be done by, but it is officially in the works now. That's something I'm definitely excited for. What's your take?
Oh, dude, I mean, this was the next step. So obviously the college football game needed to come back. EA brought it back for us. Amazing yearly release. But it seemed like from then on, it was like, okay, what's next? The college basketball game has to come next. Because I cannot tell you, I mean, this year, bro, during March Madness, I'm looking up how to download college basketball rosters on the NBA, downloading uniforms, putting them in like a tournament, like, again, like doing all this crazy stuff just to get a college basketball experience. And I remember watching YouTube videos of guys back in the day playing, and they took over a team, and there was the March Madness, the selection show, and everything, dude. And I was just like, we need this back, and I am so happy that this is going to be coming. And I mean, shout out to EA. I know that they get a lot of crap, but from what they've done with this college football game and now what they're going to be doing with the college basketball, I mean, we got to give them the props. So shout out to EA, and I'm very excited for this game. I'll be taking George to the Natty in basketball too.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait to hop into that 68-man tournament. That's going to be crazy. I never had an old college basketball game, so...
Yeah, I think the last one that came out was the one with Blake Griffin on the cover. Blake
Griffin. I think it was like 08.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So
a long time ago.
And I assume this is going to be similar to the football game where it's going to be real players. Like, I feel like this is going to be a little harder to do with basketball because they're in college like a lot less long than college football. But, I mean, still... Who knows? I assume they're going to be real players.
There's also like three times the amount of D1 basketball schools.
Yeah, I know.
There's like 300 something as opposed to like, what is it, 123 or 124 now?
Yeah. So
it's going to be a lot. But I wouldn't bank on it coming out next year. Probably would be 2027 at the earliest. But I would hope we would get one in 2027 before. I feel like 2028's too long. Like, all right, 3 years? It shouldn't take that long, but I have no idea.
Well, I just remember with the college football game, it got delayed a year because it was supposed to come out summer 23, but then they delayed, and I think that was about the three-year development mark.
Yeah.
So that game took about 3 years. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, if their original timeline is going to be 27, as long as it doesn't get delayed, I think that's a good one. I wonder when the release is going to be, though, because they're definitely going to want to stagger it, like not releasing college football and college basketball in the same time. And the football game is pretty much going to be a summer release from here on out. So I wonder if that's going to be more of like a...
Yeah, the football's like a month-ish, month and a half before the season starts. If they did that for basketball, it would be like, what, late August, early September?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't come out until like... December.
Yeah, because is that typically when the NBA 2Ks come out? And I know 2K's not making this game, but I wonder like if that's going to be like similar.
I wouldn't be surprised. Let me see. 2K 6. September 5th.
Got you. Yeah. So, and this is going to be interesting because I can't remember last EA basketball game they've made, because 2K has been the basketball game. I mean, mm-hmm. Did EA do NBA Live back in the day?
I think it was 2K.
I don't think 2K didn't do NBA Live. 2K is, of course, NBA 2K, and then NBA Live, I think, was EA to like rival them, but then EA just put all their chips into the football games and like hasn't really made a basketball game. Which 2K did make the last college basketball game with the one with Blake Griffin on the cover. So that's going to be interesting because I've only ever played 2K basketball games my whole life. So we're going to see how that works out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see for sure. And go ahead and move on to some other news that pertains to your favorite team as of this morning. So the Steelers traded straight up one for one Minkah Fitzpatrick for Jalen Ramsey and then added Jonnu Smith as well for a late round pick swap from Miami. So a lot to come away with here, but Arthur Smith gets his boy toy Jonnu Smith back. The reunion that anyone could have imagined coming. I think he's followed Arthur Smith everywhere that he's been, starting since, I guess, Tennessee Titans. And then the Minkah for Jalen Ramsey trade is just, I don't know, dude. It looked like just a trade for picks at first, because like it was released in like four separate tweets pertaining to the situation, but turned out to be straight up one for one, the rare player for player trade. So, what are we thinking there?
So at first I see Jalen Ramsey as a Steeler. Immediately I'm like, let's go. We got ourselves an elite corner. Of course, he's 30, but still he's got plenty of good years left in him. But then, of course, the rest of the tweets start coming out, and then it's that Minkah Fitzpatrick is the one that's being traded. So maybe I'm like, ooh, okay, this dampers things for sure. Let me look into this and see if there's some reasoning behind why we're trading Minkah. I look at Minka's age. He's 28. He's 2 years younger than Jalen Ramsey. Like, okay. Had a Pro Bowl year last year. I look at his contract. This may be the only thing that can somewhat explain it, but not really, is that his contract is up next year. So maybe the Steelers think, okay. But then again, this wouldn't explain it. I was going to say maybe they're all in on this year and they want to trade to get a piece in because they don't see themselves competing next year. But then at that point, if his contract is up next year, why are you trying to offload it now? So I don't know if it's a contract play or a Again, I don't know the move of trading Minkah for Jalen Ramsey. Like, of course, in a vacuum, getting Jalen Ramsey is good and all. But I don't know if they just don't believe, if they believe in our backup safeties more than our corners. Because, I mean, the safety that's going to come in now and plays Juan Thornhill, who, I mean, is a decent player. I mean, he's no Minkah. And now it's going to be Joey Porter, Darius Slay, and Jalen Ramsey. So I don't really understand the rationale behind that, but at the end of the day, it's good to get Jalen Ramsey in here and that kind of lock up that corner spot. I'm just wondering if now this maybe we see one of the corners now as expendable and we trade him for a safety. Like, again, I don't know the rationale here, but it's just a bunch of thoughts going a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, my question for you is, who the heck do you have to play safety? Who's your other safety that already started?
It's Deshaun Elliott.
So Deshaun Elliott and
And
Juwan
Juan
Thornhill.
Thornhill. Juwan Thornhill.
Juwan. That is a safety tandem.
Yeah. And that's my thing is, okay, Joey Porter Jr. and Darius Slay, like, I felt like I would have been fine going in that, and then of course, I don't know, dude. I don't know. All I know is that
Which
this
of
year.
those three do you put at the nickel if you're Mike Tomlin? Because it's three outside
Jalen,
corners.
honestly, I think Jalen Ramsey makes sense in the nickel because he played safety in college. So, like, he
Yeah.
has safety experience and he's big. He's like 6'2 or 6'3. So,
Yeah. I was thinking that about Joey Porter too. He might probably doesn't have any safety experience, but he's pretty big for a corner. That's definitely it's an interesting trade. Everything I wish they could just put it all into one news break, but it was just like Steelers got Ramsey. Steelers traded away Minkah. I was like, okay, where do they go? Like, who do they get in return? It was like, oh, they got Jalen Ramsey in return. as part of the same deal. Then it was like, Johnny Smith has also been added into the trade for a late round pick swap. I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah, we're running 13 personnel out here. We're going to have Freiermuth, Darnell, and Johnny Smith, which I don't know. Yeah, this probably doesn't mean good for Darnell, honestly. So that's kind of sucks in the Georgia perspective. But Johnny Smith,
I feel like. I feel like there's a world where Darnell has such a unique role on the team to where this trade might not really matter. I mean, he's like 285 pounds at 6'8". Like, he's a couple McDonald's cheeseburgers away from an offensive tackle.
I mean, we've been talking about Darnell moving to left tackle, right tackle for ever since his days at Georgia. So, I mean, he's basically, I mean, he's essentially a swing offensive lineman that can catch a few check down passes here and there and maybe some go get a 50-50 ball in the red zone. So, hey, it's pretty valuable.
I will say from his time in Atlanta, I was a relatively good Jonnu Smith fan. I mean, he got a lot of utilization. He can do a lot of different things. He's a very, very athletic tight end, but, I mean, he's getting older.
Yeah.
Getting slower. So, I mean, that takes away his biggest threat, which is definitely his vertical speed. Very interesting piece. That's Arthur Smith's favorite player. I bet he thinks that's like his long lost son or something like that.
That's going to be a documentary in like
the resemblance is 10 years.
It's going to be a documentary in like 10, 15 years where like Arthur Smith somehow has a connection to Johnny Smith and like crazy like family tree. And he's going to be like, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be a movie.
You never know, dude. But an interesting morning for my fellow Steelers fan here on this show. So we can go ahead and lay that topic to rest and see if anything else happens throughout the day. I mean, who knows? They're on the phone right now with just about anyone. And they're like, oh, y'all thought we wanted Jalen Ramsey? We're going to flip him for a better safety. So
yeah,
I don't know.
He's going to Sonny Weaver that thing and be like, I want my picks back. And I want David Putney.
Meanwhile, y'all going to re-sign TJ Watt, dude? Come on.
I don't know, dude.
That is, if you look up the word Pittsburgh in the dictionary, it shows a picture of TJ Watt. Like, what are we waiting for here?
Nope. It's all good, dude. Jack Sawyer, he's just going to be the next one.
Oh God. All right. Let's move on here to Georgia football recruiting on an absolute heater. So taken yesterday out of effect, if you go back to Saturday, we had 7 commits in 7 days. And some would say we may or may not have predicted most of these on this channel right here. At least gave a good inkling to who we thought we were going to get. So these are in no particular order, but these are the 7 that we have landed according to our Nostradometer. So we got Jay Lamar, running back from Colquitt, Craig Dandridge, wide receiver from Cambridge. We ended up not getting Malachi Lee, the offensive lineman from Hawaii, but we kind of knew that was going to be the case, at least the day of. I think we recorded, and it wasn't looking too likely. But on the other hand of that, we also spoke about Chase Calicutt. I was kind of like 50-50 on that one, but definitely a prospect that I wanted on the team. And we ended up signing Chase Calicutt out of Houston, Texas. 4-star, listed as a safety, wants to play corner, like 6'3", 200, just kind of a
most
super freaky athlete.
Most obvious future star I've ever seen.
Yeah.
A star is in the position, which he could be a star as and in like a great player. Star in the Georgia football scheme of basically the nickel corner, the most obvious plug and play at that position I've seen.
As long as he's going to be close to the line of scrimmage, able to use his gigantic self to play the run, it's going to be, I don't think you want a body type like him just stuck on the outside unless you're just a stick like Daniel Harris.
Yeah.
But that was a great signing for us. And then James Johnson, number one defensive tackle in the country out of Miami. Huge. Won him over from Miami. One of the earlier commits in that 7-day run, Kamari Brooks, edge from North Oconee. And then Shedarius Tootle, inside linebacker flip from Auburn. And then Corey Howard out of Valdosta, 6'6", 275-pound edge, just looks unbelievable, even though he's only rated as a 3-star. I definitely think he was high up on the list of our edge prospects. So that's all that have committed so far. Anyone stick out to you?
Honestly, dude, just as a whole, this class has surprised me because going into this class, like the entire process, the narrative and kind of the overall vibe was, all right, this probably it has the feeling of this is gonna break Kirby Smart's top five recruiting class run because it just didn't seem like very, I don't know, just the way the class was shaping up. We knew we were still going to be a very good class, but it just didn't seem like it was going to be one of those like marquee classes. But it's come together in a big way in the month of June. I think it's like 13 commits in total in just the month of June. Just absolutely insanity. I think the Chase Calicut one is probably the most like crazy because I mean there are reports that he was Texas, 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 and then out of the blue, he kind of—I don't know what changed, but very quickly, it almost seemed overnight, Georgia wins out over him. Which, if you have a chance to go watch this guy's highlight film, this dude is fun to watch. He has flashes of—I mean, he's got some Malachi Starks flash in there, but he can come up and hit stick. And he's playing in North Shore in Texas. So it's not, he's playing some really good football out there in Texas. To get that guy from Houston to come to Georgia, unbelievable. So overall, just a great, great month as a whole. And there's still more to be done. There's still some prospects out there that we're going after. I'm sure we'll get into it here in a second. Some that have kind of been teetering and you know, it's going to be interesting.
One way we could end this month strong would be landing PJ Dean later on this afternoon, looking to us like a South Carolina lead late in the game. I know South Carolina's been really heavy into this recruitment since the very beginning, as have we, but he's interior defensive lineman, kind of similar to James Johnson, and not as highly rated, but that ratings don't say everything about the player. But if I were to pick one of the two, I'd go with James Johnson. But PJ Dean's supposed to commit later on this afternoon, looking like South Carolina. But if he commits to Georgia today, that would be 15 commits in the month of June. 15 in 30 days is unbelievable. So we have 14 right now. I just went through and counted them, and we have, according to 247, the number two recruiting class in the country behind only USC.
Amazing. And on the South Carolina thing, so obviously South Carolina, they're not going to land as many blue chips as the traditional powerhouses, but when it comes to guys that they hone in on, especially guys in state, they typically do a really good job of landing at least one or two like high-end blue chippers. So one of the more recent ones, of course, was Nick Harbor. It was between him and or them and Oregon, and they won out over Oregon. And then it was Dylan Stewart last year. It was either them or Ohio State. They got Dylan Stewart. And now this year, it seems PJ Dean is one of those guys, and it's either us or Georgia, and Ohio State's kind of in third right now. It's not going to shock me at all to see South Carolina land him. And I mean, this is probably a situation where Georgia says, we like you, South Carolina says, we need you. It's that type of recruitment more than likely. And again, that's not cope. That's just the facts. Like I can almost guarantee you that's the messaging there. So that's that. But then, sorry, did you have anything else to add to that?
Nope. Hit the
Gotcha.
nail on the head.
I'm going to tell you what, though, one of the more interesting recruitments that's going to come down to the wire. I believe he commits on the 12th, I want to say, July 12th.
We got two big ones that day.
Derek Cooper. Now, this Derek Cooper recruitment is one of the more interesting ones I've ever seen. So, if you guys remember, it might have been like last year at this point. Maybe not.
It was
I don't.
last year, early summer.
Yeah, last year, early summer, Derek Cooper commits to Georgia. And within, he was committed to Georgia for about 13 to 14 hours before he then decommitted from Georgia. Which, those that don't know the story, essentially, Derek Cooper committed to Georgia and his mom essentially posted on her Instagram, or I can't remember what it was, basically saying, listen, my son is no longer committed. Like he made a rash decision. Like his commitment is open. Like we're going to go through the process. So essentially, it has been this whole time, from what we can see, at least from our perspective, the mom wants him to stay in state and go to Miami. I think Derek Cooper wants to go to Georgia. And it's almost a battle. And at this point, we think that Georgia is kind of starting to win mom over a little bit. She's starting to get on board with the program. Be like, hey, Miss Cooper, you might be living in Florida, but I can guarantee you, we're gonna make sure that you can get up to all the games. All right, we're gonna fly you and we're gonna make sure you're taken care of to see your son play. Again, I don't. It's probably something to do with the fact that she wants him to stay closer to home, which don't blame her. Mom doesn't want her kid to leave out of state. But at the same time, it's apparent that Derek Cooper wants to go to Georgia, or at least that would be his decision. But it's just a matter of getting the mom on board. So it's kind of a race for that at this point. For the longest time, it was about a 75% Miami, 25% Georgia, but I think that Nostradamus is starting to slowly kind of tilt our way, and we're gonna see to if they can eventually win it out because he's another great player, and Jay Lamar is on record saying that he is gonna try to recruit Derek Cooper to Georgia as hard as he can. Like that is the guy that he's trying to get here.
I think that's funny that he chose someone to like that shares a position with him. Because I mean, Derek Cooper is obviously he's the number one athlete in the country, but it's going to be listed as a running back by all means necessary. He is definitely a running back type of build, but I agree with you. It's going to be winning the mom over. It's, hey, we're going to fly you private straight from Miami right into Athens
There's an
Municipal
airport in Athens.
Airport. I don't see why not. So he is on July 12th. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Caden Prothro is also set to commit on July 12th. So that's another one that recently it looks like we could be favored for, maybe a 75-25 Georgia lean, hopefully. But if that's the case, then July 12th could go down as a holiday for the University of Georgia, getting five-star number two tight end in the class, and then five-star number one athlete in the country would be that'd be one heck of a day for sure.
Oh yeah, no, and that would kind of put a bow on the 2026 class. Which, regardless, this has been one of the more fun recruiting summers. Like typically every summer, like this is kind of when all the blue chip prospects pop off because they want to be committed before their senior season. So yeah, no, it's definitely been amazing, and that's also a good point that you brought up. Jay Lamar. It's very interesting that he's kind of hardcore recruiting a guy that shares his position. And that to me just shows a guy that A is smart about like his longevity as a running back, but B also is very much team oriented and wants Georgia to be the best they can possibly be. Because again, I could be wrong on this, but I don't think there are going to be very many running backs who are going to commit to a school and then try to bring another highly rated running back in with them. Because selfishly, you want the touches, you want the carries, you want the accolades, you want the awards, you want the NFL draft buzz. But Jay Lamar knows, A, you wear those tires in college, you ain't gonna last very long in the NFL. And even if you do, even if you don't wear your tires, there's still not a great chance that you're gonna last long in the NFL just with the nature of a running back position. And then, of course, he wants Georgia to be the best they can be, because if we get Jalen Warren, Derek Cooper, that's going to be one of the best recruiting running back lands that we've had in a while, because it seemed to be a while since Georgia has had like that Gurley Chubb, that Keith Marshall, you know, those just guys.
Yeah.
So, looking for that.
Yeah, looking forward to it as well. And then last one that we both genuinely just have no idea about. 50-50 between a number of four or five schools. Tyler Atkinson, number one inside linebacker in the country. We got no idea. So obviously hope that we are able to land that one. I mean, Kirby's had a great personal relationship with him, in-state prospect since he's in like seventh or eighth grade. So that's one that hopefully relationships and family ties rule out just about everything else.
I will say, if I had to put a leaderboard right now on the Tyler Atkinson recruitment, like let's say we're looking at the EA College Football 25 recruiting bars right now. All right. And first, I think Georgia like is slightly in the lead right now, if we were to look at it. Again, this is all speculation and like what we think based on like looking at the facts. I think you'd go Georgia. I think Ohio State is probably in second.
I would agree.
And then maybe a tie between Oregon, Texas, and I think Clemson is kind of creeping up into that area too. I mean, it's between those five, but that's kind of what I would put it on at this moment.
I agree with you on that. It's going to be one that comes down to the absolute end of the wire for sure. But anything else on the recruiting front? I don't know really of any other 2026s that we have. Like on the cusp of recruiting.
No, that's really all I can think of. And
Right.
it also just feels great to have the quarterback locked up because
Yeah.
it sucks when you're going in and you're getting all these guys, but you're like, oh, we don't really have a quarterback in this class, which, it's really good to feel that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Very happy with Jared Curtis when the decision was made, how it was made, and essentially how locked in he seems to be, just from a helping us recruit for his class standpoint. It's going to be great. Got a couple of good wide receivers to pair with him. Hopefully we can add Prothro, a truly elite tight end prospect, to that list. All right. That's going to be the end of that on recruiting. We're going to go ahead and pivot here to a little bit of NBA talk real quick, before we have a little game plan for the end of the show. So free agency for the NBA starts today at 6 p.m. and the Hawks have five open roster spots. We only have one shooting guard and two small forwards currently. So you would say that we need some shooting guards and small forwards. Maybe a backup point guard potentially, at least those would be positions of need. So the only one that I really have an inkling on is we are favored to land Nickeil Alexander-Walker from the Minnesota Timberwolves. Very good 3-and-D wing, plays shooting guard. So career defensive specialist, and would be honestly great to pair with Dyson Daniels, like a couple of just truly elite caliber defensive wings. And then he's a 38% career three-point shooter, averaging 9 points per game off the bench, about 23 minutes a game. I hope we wouldn't have to use our $25 million trade exception on him, because I don't necessarily think he's like that caliber of a player. But with these NBA salaries being so inflated, you really have no idea he's probably going to cost that much. But we also have a $14.5 million trade exception that I would prefer to use on him and save the 25 for, like, no offense to him, but a little bit better of a player. But that's really the only connection that I've seen so far heading into free agency, but that one seems to have the chance to pop off tonight. So that would be cool.
And it definitely seems that the Hawks are like they're doing this smart and they know that, okay, Trae Young is going to give us no defense And as a fact, he's going to be a negative on the defense side. That's just what it's going to be. He's small and he's an
He has
offensive
gotten
guy.
better
He
every
got
single
better.
year, but he started off very, very low.
Exactly. And they're being very mindful to surround the entire team. They have to make up for it with better defenders around him. Of course, got Dyson Daniels, who amazing defender. Of course, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, if we get him. Porzingis, who's a shot blocker who can block shots at the rim. So I see
Jalen
the vision.
Johnson and Okongwu both plus defensively.
Exactly. So I see the vision for what the Hawks, for the first time in a while, I'm like, okay, I kind of see what they're doing here. Okay. I see the vision and it makes sense because they know that with Haliburton out for the whole rest of the year and a bunch of other players out with Achilles, they know that the East is wide open.
Yep. I did want to touch on this one last thing. Ever since the draft and that trade that we did with the Pelicans to move back 10 spots and pick up their first round pick next year, unprotected, which is wild. I've seen three like mock draft scenarios for next year. All three of them were projected number two overall pick from the New Orleans Pelicans. And we have taken AJ Diabanza, or however you say it, with all of them, which would be amazing. There seems to be a clear big three for next year's draft. Some, what's the guy's name from Kansas? His name is slipping my mind, but that's fine. Him, AJ Diabanca, and Carlos Boozer's son, power forward for Duke this year. Those are going to be the one, two, and three picks. Right now, the guy from Kansas is projected to go number one, Diabanca two, and then Boozer three. But there's a lot of time for that to change. They're all one and done prospects, so they're all going to be super young, very developable traits. So, I mean, if we end up with one of those three from the New Orleans Pelicans for moving back 10 spots, thank you. That's all I have to say. Thank you. You got fleeced.
I'm looking up right now who the guy from Kansas that you're talking about.
I think his name
Oh, is
starts.
it Darren Peterson?
Yeah, it starts with D. I knew that. Yep. What position?
So it says a shooting guard, 6'5", 195.
Nice. Yep. That'd definitely be a great piece to add. He's obviously going to have a lot to prove if he's going to go number one overall over someone with NBA pedigree like Boozer and the number one overall recruit in the country from last year to BYU. So. Thank you, New Orleans. That's it. Going to be hate watching the Pelicans like crazy this year. Just hope they get a high percentage for the lottery pick. But we all know it just comes down to Adam Silver's decision. If he wants the Hawks to be good, we're going to be good. If he wants us to be bad, we're going to be bad. But I think our floor is at least like better than the play-in game. Like one or two slots better than the play-in on the East.
Yeah, if we're in the play-in again this year, then I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. This
Season was
team.
a loss if we make the play-in.
Exactly.
I think it's the top six, so we need to be a top six team in the East, which right now on paper doesn't seem like it's going to be a crazy hard thing to do. Like we're asking just for a couple games over 500. It's not like we're asking you to win 60 games like the Thunder this year. But that's really all we got on the NBA front. I know there's some things going around about LeBron opting into his player option and then immediately saying that the Lakers suck and he's got one more year left and seems like he might want to trade, so I don't know. I don't know if there's a person on this earth that I dislike more than LeBron James. But that's that. So now we have our little game, Cole, if you would like to explain this to our audience.
Oh, yes, I would love to. So, we are going to be playing a game of Would It Be Crazy If? So, essentially, college football related, going into this season, me and Jacob are going to give certain scenarios where we're going to ask, Would it be crazy if insert scenario here? And we are both going to discuss and say, if that scenario he said, would actually be like very insane. Like, we do not see that happening. Or if, hold on, that honestly doesn't sound too crazy, and that could actually happen. Just a good exercise to get us in the college football mood again, and to just kind of jog our brains about. And maybe, hey, we look back in this and we say a scenario, and we're going to either be dead wrong or 100% right. So,
Yep.
definitely looking forward to this.
You want to go ahead and kick it off for us?
Yes, I will. So, this topic is going to be very near and dear to Georgia fans' hearts, because this is going to be a team that we're going to be watching a lot of this year. Would it be crazy if Miami lost four games this year? Which, okay, you're going to laugh and you're going to say, clearly that's a troll. Like, they're not going to lose four games. But I'm just going to read you. There are seven games on their schedule right here. And I'm going to ask you, would it be crazy if they lost four of these games?
Yeah.
Week one, they play Notre Dame. They could easily lose that. In fact, they're probably going to be the underdogs. They could easily lose that game.
What week?
Florida, week one.
They play Notre Dame week one. Week one gonna be a movie, bro.
Exactly. So that's
Oh.
one right there that could easily be a loss. Number two, Florida. This one will be in Miami this year, but
Okay.
that is a game that I could see, like, okay, they could lose that one. Florida State. Now, not saying that this one is likely or that it's going to happen, but again, it's at Florida State. And for the sake of argument, I'm going to say they're not going to lose that game, but it wouldn't be insane if they found a way to lose that game. Louisville. Jeff Brohm and the boys, they're going to be a solid team. We know that. Miller Moss, decent quarterback. All right. At SMU, playoff team. Kevin Jennings.
I could
He
absolutely
can.
see them losing that.
Exactly. Syracuse. Fran Brown got the crystal ball's number. I mean, he beat him once, so.
Yeah.
And then at Virginia Tech.
Ooh.
You know what
Do they still
happens,
have that
Mullins?
quarterback?
What's up?
Do they still have that quarterback?
I think they do, yes. So that's seven games right there that I just listed. I don't think it's crazy to say that there is a world where they could lose four of those.
Yeah.
And listen up. So last year, Miami and their defense was terrible. Okay. Even if they get somewhat better on the defensive, even if they get better, okay, let's say even they have an average defense this year. Okay. Their offense is not going to be what it was last year. Like, it's almost impossible to replicate what they did on offense last year. Now, Carson Beck could be a very solid quarterback, but again, he's coming off of surgery. He hasn't thrown in a very long time. If that offense takes a step back, then you're almost breaking even on just things that they've gotten better at, and who knows? And so, in my mind, when I look at this, I don't think it's crazy to say that Miami could turn in an 8-4 year this year.
I don't think it's crazy at all. I have the one that I have to start out with is definitely crazy. But I think it's definitely going to be a fun topic to talk about. So my first one is this year in the SEC, we have potential for a 3-4 or 5-way tie for the SEC between Georgia, Texas, LSU, Bama, and then maybe Ole Miss if Austin Simmons plays like how he did in the one drive against Georgia. I think I'm going to be pretty high on him for the remainder of the offseason, at least until we see something, because he took apart essentially a top 10 defense in the sport relatively easily. I have all the schedules pulled up in front of me, but it would take a long time to go through all of them. So we're going to skip Georgia because we obviously know our schedule. But I'm saying the tie would be potentially at 10 and 2 at the top of the SEC. So we'll say that's losses for us at Alabama, at Georgia, which I don't think is going to happen, just for the record, and Texas at Georgia. But there is definitely potential for us to beat Alabama and to lose in a weird situation to an Ole Miss or a Florida, or no, that's about it. That's really all the tough ones that we have. But Texas could have two SEC losses. They go at Florida this year, and then obviously at Georgia, and then versus Oklahoma in the Red River. And Oklahoma's been known to give them some trouble. And then to end the year, they also play Texas A&M. And who knows, if they have a good year, they could be pushing towards the top of the SEC as well. So, I mean, there's another team that you could add into this thing. Alabama obviously plays Georgia. They play Tennessee. They play at Auburn this year. Jordan Hare being an interesting spot. And don't forget that they almost lost to South Carolina last year. Team that returns a
And
lot of talent. They
that's
go
in
to
Williams-Brice.
Williams-Brice this year. So that's definitely going to be an interesting schedule. Texas and Bama also start off with tougher games than us, playing at Ohio State for Texas and then at Florida State for Alabama. LSU, they go at Ole Miss, which would be crazy. They go at Alabama, so that would be their two losses that you can essentially see. And then they also play Florida, they play LSU, but or they play South Carolina. Both of those are at home. They play A&M also at home. So they have a pretty strong home slate here. And then Ole Miss is kind of the one that we're a little bit on the fence about here. So they go at Georgia, obviously. And then they have so many home games this year. All
Really?
their other tough games are at home. They play Arkansas at home, LSU at home, South Carolina at home, Florida at home, and then they go at Mississippi State to finish the year. So this is a one where I could definitely see them losing a fluke game like they did last year to Kentucky, at home, by the way. And I definitely think they could end up with two losses here, but the vast majority of their games are at home. This is kind of wild to look at. They play one, two, three, four away games, and they go away at Oklahoma too. So that's a potential. But that's my first scenario. I definitely think that would be crazy, but we do have potential for a lot of teams to just, I mean, it's going to be eating each other up essentially.
I mean I mean, obviously, yes, that would be crazy because each one could easily lose two SEC games, but the odds that they all match up and they're all two SEC losses for each team is very low. But yes, we definitely have a scenario where at the end of the year and all these teams are jumbled at the top and like five or six different teams could there's like this six different scenarios of who could play in the SEC championship. I remember last year I was having to be on a website. There was a website that was literally built of what will the SEC championship be? And I went through all this, like you could click this team loses to this one, this team loses that one, this, that, and the other, and then it would spit out who would be in the SEC championship given that scenario. So I think I'm probably going to be on that website at the end of the year this year too.
Probably. Definitely seems like it.
All right. My next one. Would it be crazy if Alabama doesn't beat Florida State by two scores in week? Because hear it out, okay? Florida State, not great, but they're at home, okay? That's the one thing to keep in mind. This fan base, there won't be the sense of, oh, we're so bad, like we're not going. It's going to be the first game of the year. Alabama's in town. If you don't think Tallahassee's going to be rocking, and there's going to be every student on campus at that game and rowdy, ready to go. I mean, I that's because that's going to be a standalone game. Or no, that one's going to be on Saturday. Regardless, it's going to be a packed environment. I'm pretty sure the spread on that game's like 13 and a half. So, an underrated storyline that's not getting talked about. Florida State hired Gus Malzahn as their offensive coordinator. Gus Malzahn, as we know, has been the most successful Auburn head coach against Alabama in like the past 30 years. He went 3-5
Interesting.
against he went 3-5 against Alabama, or
I did
two and
not think of that.
he went 2-4 or something. And we know what old Gus did with Nick Marshall at Auburn, okay? Could Thomas Castellanos get in his Nick Marshall bag week one and pull off some crazy stuff? I'm just saying, I'm not saying they're going to win, but I don't think it would be the craziest thing in the world if this is a 30-20 or maybe even a like 21-16 esque type of game. Because again, this is going to be Ty Simpson's first career start in that stadium. So on paper, you might say, dude, like that's crazy. Alabama's going to wipe the floor with them, which they might, but I don't think it's going to be crazy if they cover that spread week one.
I agree with that. I have been to a couple rocking games in that dope Campbell Stadium. It does get pretty loud. Also, August 30th, it is going to be hotter than you know what. That is, Florida State is in the armpit of Florida, and it is not cool by any means whatsoever. We were getting beaten down on by the sun for 5 hours. That's beside the point, because I mean, it's obviously going to be hot for summer practices in Alabama, but I don't know, man. There was something about that. I'd never sweat so much in my life. It's going to be a rocking stadium for sure, and a very fun game to watch. That is 3:30 on that Saturday.
Okay.
That's going to be a good one. My next one is, would it be crazy if Georgia Tech wins the ACC? Gets themselves into a college football playoff. It's
Right
got
off
to
the
be.
bat, yes.
Yeah, I think it would be crazy too. But their schedule, they have a very favorable home schedule. So they start off at Colorado. It's obviously not an ACC game. And then they got Gardner Webb, but then game three, they get Clemson at home this year. That's going to be, for all intents and purposes, I think that's going to be a really good game. I think the spread on that one's going to be below 10, probably below 7. It's going to be less than a touchdown spread. And then, so that's their first ACC game. Then they go at Wake Forest, and then they're home against Virginia Tech. If that was an away game, I'd say that's a sneaky loss, but I don't think so. Then they go at Duke. And then they get Syracuse at home, another sneaky good team in the ACC. And then at NC State, at Boston College, and then home versus Pitt. I don't think that's what you would necessarily think of as a daunting ACC schedule. You don't have to play Miami, which is weird because they played them last year.
I think they played 2 years in a row. I think they had like a home and home or something.
Oh, I thought they did the same thing as the SEC where the schedule is just flipped home and away, but I thought that was weird not seeing Miami on here. But really, their toughest game is going to be Clemson, and they get it at home. And then probably, I don't even know, maybe at Duke. But I feel like if they could finish the ACC 7-1, or however many games that is, 7-1, 8-1. I think they have potential to at least make the ACC championship game.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, dude. When it comes to the ACC, your scenario could have been Clemson versus the field. The field wins the ACC, and I'd say it's crazy, to be honest. That's
No.
just kind of how I feel like they stack up with the ACC this year and like their roster and just their overall talent composition. But that's just me. So, hey, but I mean, when you lay that schedule out, if yeah, like you said, they go 7-1 in the ACC, and then you get a rematch with Clemson in the ACC championship, who knows what could happen.
Yeah, it's hard to beat a team twice.
Right, this is my last one because I only did three. Would it be crazy if Indiana did it again? I'm going to come out and probably say I personally think yes, this would be crazy because I'm going to read you out their schedule. Okay, this is nothing like they had last year. All right. They start off and they play Old Dominion and Kennesaw State. No disrespect to Kennesaw State. Shout out to the Hootie Hoos. Not going to happen. Then they play Indiana State. So that's their first three games. Okay, 3-0. Good job. Then they got Illinois, who we all believe is going to be a very solid team this year. You go at Iowa. You go at Oregon. Michigan State. UCLA. At Maryland. At Penn State. Wisconsin. At Purdue. Right off the bat, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's about 5 to 6 potential losses on that schedule. If they were to only lose one game on this schedule, I will never say, I mean, I've never said anything bad about Kurt Cignetti to begin with, but you'll never hear a bad word about Kurt Cignetti come out of my mouth if they were to only lose one game with this schedule.
Call a cigarette.
Exactly. Especially going at Oregon and at Penn State. If they split one of those games, I would be shocked. They got Fernando Mendoza in there. But, dude, I just don't see it happening this year. I think Illinois probably more so has a chance to be last year's Indiana, but that's just me.
You didn't take my next one, but you gave me a perfect segue right into it. Illinois is this year's Indiana. I put Illinois makes the Big Ten championship game / is a playoff team this year. So I do have their schedule pulled up here. It's relatively favorable. I mean, we can say what we want about the Big Ten, but they're not as top to bottom, anywhere near as deep of a conference as the SEC is. So, start off Western Illinois. Okay, whatever. Then they got a weird matchup with Duke. They go at Duke. That'll be an interesting game in week 2. And then they return home, play Western Michigan in week 3. And then, big game, you just highlighted it, they go at Indiana, week 4. And then they turn around and have another one. It's a pretty tough stretch here. They got Indiana, but they come home for USC, the semi-cross-country travel aspect that the Big Ten has initiated is going to be interesting for sure. Then they go at Purdue, who is a glorified high school football team. And then their biggest game of the year, they got Ohio State, but they get them at home. So if they're going to be this year's Indiana, that's going to be their only loss. Because, I mean, you can almost chalk it up, but with it being at home, I think it's going to be a good game. That screams less than a 10-point spread and a trap game for Ohio State.
I'm telling you what, that game has like Luke Altmaier legacy. Champaign, Illinois is going crazy that night, written all over it.
Yep. Then they got to turn around and hit a sneaky trap game for themselves at Washington with a lot of travel involved there.
And you know how I feel about Washington this year. That game right there, that is going to be a very sneaky game for them because you already know all their eggs are in that beating Ohio State basket. Then you have to turn around and go to Husky Stadium, which is a very underrated environment too, by the way. That's going to be a tough one.
Yep. And then they got Rutgers and Maryland, both at home, at Wisconsin, and then Northwestern to finish off the year. So I could see potentially one or two losses on there and then making the Big Ten championship game and at least putting up a fight with someone, finishing 10-3 with a conference championship game loss. Does that put you into the playoff?
I mean, it's going to be like the Indiana situation last year where Indiana, I mean, they made it because they only had one loss going into there. But yeah, what if Indiana had 3 losses last year? Do we think they would have gotten in?
Probably not.
Probably not. It's all going to come down to, A, if you lose to, like, the Ohio States and your other big games, is it competitive? And how do you look in that game? Because as we remember last year, Indiana, they got skull drugged by Ohio State.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're just going to have to see.
Yeah. With that being the only good team that they played last year, too, and then kind of turned around and laid a stinker in the college football playoff against Notre Dame. No shade. We did too. That's fine. No shade at all. Last one I have here, just kind of cap off this little exercise. Tennessee returns back to 6-6 form with Old Miko. This might be me drinking on the haterade, but that's totally fine. Tennessee has, they got a pretty tough schedule. I don't know if I can point out 6 losses, but I mean, they would teeter between 6-6 and 8-4. So I mean, just borderline not going to be competitive with that top tier SEC teams that we spoke about earlier. They start off with a really tough game at a neutral field. Yeah, versus
Against
Syracuse,
Syracuse.
week one. That was weird because it doesn't have the little at Syracuse thing, so I'm thinking that's going to be at a neutral field. Then they come home, East Tennessee State, whatever. Then Georgia at home, week three. No.
Yeah.
UAB at home. Then they go to Mississippi State, sneaky, sneaky.
Cowbells.
Don't count out the Cowbells. Don't count them out. Then they get Arkansas at home. They got to go to Alabama this year. They got to go to Kentucky, which we know, sneaky tough place to play. It's late October. It might be cold. I don't know. I don't know why we always struggle there, but we do. And then they return home versus Oklahoma, New Mexico State. And then they have to go at Florida this year. And then Diego Pavia with the troops marching into Knoxville for the last game of the year. I could point out 4 losses on this schedule.
I will say 6-6 would be crazy. I will say that. But I think they kind of fall in this Miami where it's like, yeah, they could win 10 games, but they could lose four. You know,
Right.
it just depends on those in-between matchups and how they go their way and how the quarterback position shapes out.
Yeah, so I'm having them lose Syracuse, Georgia,
Oh.
Alabama, and Florida. And then sneaky games, Vanderbilt, last game of the year. We know what Diego Pavia thinks about them. Arkansas, middle of the year. Who knows? They could be a fun team again with Talen Green this year. And then both at Mississippi State and at Kentucky, like none of those games are going to be cakewalks. You can't look at me right now and say that they're definitely going to win one of those three games.
Yeah. I would say there are four games for sure where I look at this schedule and I'm like, I would probably pick them to lose that game if they played tomorrow. Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma at Florida. Now the Oklahoma might be a little tough because it's at Tennessee, but I just think they're, I mean, Mateer and the boys, like I just think they're going to be rolling at that point. So those are four right there where I could see them easily losing that. And then the other ones definitely maybe like I don't all due respect to
Like
Kentucky.
you could lose one, you have those four. You could lose one out of Syracuse, Arkansas, Kentucky, Vanderbilt.
Which also sneaky, Syracuse, they got that guy Steve Angeli from Notre Dame. He's their QB this year. And of course, we know that one drive that he had against Penn State. And again, we know it's one drive. We get it. But still, looks like he was the part of being a starting caliber quarterback.
He's on that
So,
Austin Simmons trajectory where it's like
exactly.
you've gotten to prove yourself one time, but only very, very short-lived. But it looked nice.
Yep, it did.
That's all I got for this exercise. Anything else we need to talk about? Anything that we could have possibly missed? I think we ran great on time here with a relatively loaded show here.
Oh yeah. I have an idea for next episode, the game slash exercise we could do. I say we do biggest trap games of next
Ooh.
season's college football because more so than ever nowadays in college football, week in and week out with the talent dispersion that you could, I mean, we saw last year with Georgia. We could have lost against Kentucky. We could have lost, I mean, even a year ago when we played South Carolina at home, we could have lost that game. Ohio State last year could have lost to Nebraska. Oregon could have lost to Wisconsin. I can go on and on and on. So I think that there's definitely going to be some trap games.
I like that. That's going to be a little preview for next episode. So we probably won't have as many time constraint loaded topics that we found out about this morning. But other than that, that's going to do it for episode 26. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe. Give us some ideas for some more of these games in the comment section. We'll see you guys later.
Peace.